listeners to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal well-being and the well-being of our communities, our society, and the Earth itself. Each week on Connect the Dots, I talk with different experts and authors and advocates and activists, filmmakers, musicians, poets, all different kinds of people who are teaching us about different aspects of our interconnected world and bringing us all into the truth of our connection. This week, I'm really, really thrilled to have two people joining us for today's show who are representing and taking action in their specific ways that you'll learn about. With what's been going on and what will be going on in terms of justice for Standing Rock. We've covered this topic before and talked about the Dakota Access Pipeline. I have been a reporter on food, health, and the environment and was the first news cycle reporter to cover fracking in the Northeast region, and was an embedded reporter in the community that has been opposing successfully fracking and pipelines in New York and New England, and working closely with our great ally and comrade Josh Fox and many other people who are aware of the terrible dangers that these pipelines create for our communities, our water supply, and the earth itself, food supply, all of that. And so we never really had the name for ourselves of water protector, but what really has been brought to light with the Standing Rock event, activity, unity of action that we've seen since last summer is that many people all across the world understand that we all have to be water protectors, and the Standing Rock people and all who joined really have awakened us to the tremendous need to all join together to protect water and to protect the environment and to protect our communities and our people, and especially our indigenous communities who have been ancestrally for many generations the protectors of the land. So for today's show, I'm really thrilled to bring in someone who is both an amazing thought leader as well as somebody that I and a tremendous activist and inspiration to many people, Tangerine Bolin, who is the founder of Revolution Truth, which she'll be telling us about, and I am also proud and honored to consider her a friend. And with Tangerine, we're going to be talking to someone who is going to be representing the Standing Rock community and all who gathered there and what all of that was about, as a plaintiff in some lawsuits that are going to be happening that you'll learn about on this show. And so I'm also deeply honored to have on Connect the Dots today Wild Bill Left Hand Sr., a Standing Rock Sioux tribal member who lives on the reservation and who can report on what's been going on there and what needs to happen now, as we are now talking in the context of the camp being cleared, sadly, which happened this past week. But that's not the end of this struggle for justice, for water, for the earth, and for our community and people. And in fact, it's only just the beginning, and we'll be talking about that as well today. So welcome to Connect the Dots, Tangerine and Bill.
Thank you so much. So glad to be here.
Why don't we begin with how you two connected and a little bit, Tangerine, tell our listeners what Revolution Truth is about and what your current initiative is about, and how you and Bill are working with others to bring justice and rights to the Standing Rock community.
Well, sure. I'll give a quick summary and then let Wild Bill jump in as well. So I run a small civil liberties organization called Revolution Truth, revolutiontruth.org. And we basically work to restore democratic governance, ensure the rule of law, and defend people's rights against major power abuses by either, you know, nation states or corporations. In this case, it's both. And we were drawn to doing a case around Standing Rock this past fall, given the incredibly egregious things that we started seeing happening on the ground. I won't go into the few months history of the work we've done behind the scenes and the incredible experience we've had thus far. It's been challenging and amazing and exhausting and beautiful. But here we are today and filing a pretty big lawsuit, a civil liberties lawsuit, civil rights lawsuit on behalf of at least 10 plaintiffs. And Bill Lefthand Sr. He's the second plaintiff to have joined us, and I met him through another potential plaintiff who ended up going to jail on trumped-up charges, as we've seen left and right across the ground at Standing Rock. Really, anyone who's tried to stick their neck out too much has gotten in trouble, and I know Bill can describe his story for us today as well. But I wanted before I hand it over to Bill, I want to say I met him. I got his phone number by text through a wonderful Native American woman on the ground, and she said, call him, and I did, and as I was ringing him, it was one morning a few weeks ago, I hadn't really thought of what I was going to say, and I suddenly had this moment of panic where I was like, what am I doing? I don't know this guy. Why am I suddenly calling him? Well, we launched into a conversation, and he said to me, you know, I just was praying this morning about, you know, where else we can get some help, because we're not getting enough help yet at Standing Rock. So everything that's happening here is amazing, and we need to do more. So I'll hand it over to Bill. And one last thing. I just love this guy. he's had a big impact on my heart, and I'm proud to be getting to know him. I'm honored and thrilled that he's a plaintiff. So, Bill.
Good afternoon. I guess. My name is Bill Lefthand. I'm from Standing Rock and enrolled member of Standing Rock. And I've been part of this demonstration since April of 2016, when the Sacred Stone Camp evolved. And I've been there ever since and been a part of it, water protector, you know, from the very beginning. And I feel that, you know, it's something I had to do. It was a calling, a spiritual calling for me. I took my stand, and I'm still standing. I've been to jail. I've been arrested on false charges, and so I still have a court date coming up, and we got to deal with that. And so the injustice of what's happening, against us. You know, it's like, it's just, you know, I find it kind of hard to describe, you know, actually, because the consistent, you know, violations of their own constitutional laws and their own, you know, the laws against humanity, you know, our civil rights, you know, our rights as the indigenous people, and it's a constant violation, and they continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to find ways to combat that, and we have tried it in peaceful and prayerful manner, and yet we have been inflicted with their rubber bullets, their concussion grenades, their tear gas, everything that they could inflict us with, they have done so,
mm-hmm.
and it violated our right to a peaceful protest, to a gathering, and to voice our opinions.
Mm-hmm. And to keep your water supply clean and pure as it was passed to you, to preserve and protect that and pass that forward. Let me ask you something, if you don't mind. I was speaking with some people the other day who, here on the East Coast, where I am, have a pipeline coming into their region. And they were describing to me their efforts to get their community together, to organize it, to, you know, stop this and all of that. And they were describing that there was a tremendous problem in having awareness in their community that this was going to be, you know, a harmful thing, or something that people, you know, should get together and take action about. And people were having a lot of trouble recognizing that. And, you know, one of the things that these people I was speaking with said to me is, and we don't have any indigenous people here to help us stop this pipeline. And it was like, the thing that really struck me in what you were saying, Bill, is that it's almost as if, you know, something that you have a sense when you say you felt, you know, compelled or a sense of spiritual certainty that this was something that you had to do, must do, and could do in a peaceful, prayerful manner. This is a strength, an ability that, you know, not every, you know, a lot of Americans who are all, we're all descendants of immigrants and settlers, and, you know, not all Americans have that, what you expressed just now talking to me and to Tangerine here. So, you know, how is it that you have that? Where does that come from? The Native peoples of Standing Rock have become the leaders. It's like you have a natural sense of that we, you know, many other Americans don't remember or don't know. Where does that come from? Can you, you know, possibly identify, you know, how that comes to you?
To me, that comes from, I think, from the day Columbus set foot on our homeland, and to see the what they have done to our land, our territories, you know, everything, the mining, the farming, and you know, that it has destroyed, you know, all across the United States here, where us indigenous people, as the first people of this country, you know, we have our ceremony sites everywhere. We have burial sites everywhere. And the farming and industry has destroyed a lot of that. And just a need, you know, on my behalf, that to stand up and say, you know, what's enough of that? You know, enough of that. Let's stand up and take a stand and put forth our efforts to put a stop to all that destruction against us as indigenous people, and the law breaking that they do, you know, to get their way is, you know, it's like I said before, it's indescribable to me. You know, I can't hardly find words, you know, that to describe it, but just that, you know, it's a violation of our humanitarian rights, our rights as indigenous people.
You know, when the laws of a land are not acting in a lawful manner, and are not honoring their own law, their own word, they cannot be relied on to be lawful. You know, this is, I think, maybe why people feel a sense of passivity or overwhelm, or they, you know, other people, they like don't know what the right thing to do would be. What is the recourse Tangerine in this, as it's happening here, that you and Revolution Truth bring in?
Oh, yes. Well, so we're taking this battle to the courts. We want the public, people around the world, to help us defeat DAPL in D.C. And, you know, I know that these things just kind of came to your head and came to an end on the ground at Standing Rock. And that's, you know, it's a really painful time for people around that because it's been such an incredible uprising and movement and moment, and it really is made all the more incredible, or really is, I think, one of the most beautiful things I've seen, in that here we have Bill describing these violations, which we've barely scratched the surface of thus far, and I can just hear in his voice the depth of this and what his people have experienced, you know, for many years and just now at Standing Rock. So we have those, and yet he and his people have been able to rise up grounded in prayer as well. And I want to say I'm really struck by that. And I know I'm on a tangent here, but I want to say it's a hard transition because people are transitioning from this movement and moment grounded in prayer to, jumping into a lawsuit at the 12th hour to try to stop a $25 billion company. And so what we're doing is... we see this, our legal team and the entire Revolution Truth international volunteer team sees this as a pretty dramatic case of environmental injustice and racial discrimination. On the environmental injustice piece of this pipeline is running across Bill and his tribes and all of these tribes' sacred tribal, you know, treaty lands. These are treaty lands, whether it's contested or not. They are treaty lands according to documents that are part of the rule of law. And however people want to argue over that, these are tribal lands. And this pipeline has already scarred much of this land, but it gravely threatens the sole water supply for several of the tribes, and at least, you know, between 17 and 20 million people downstream of Lake Oahe. Lake Oahe is a sacred area for Bill and his tribe and other tribes, and I'll let him go into that to tell you that story. But it's an extremely sacred spot, and the water itself is sacred. And this company is drilling a pipeline under this 1.5 mile wide lake. It's the longest length of what is called horizontal directional drilling pipeline in the world that we can find anywhere on record. Yes.
Oh my.
Yes. Mm. In fact, the next closest length of HDD pipeline we can find is between 2,500 and 3,000 feet. So this
is
phenomenal. Yes. And the circumstances that surround the laying of this pipeline, the construction and laying of this pipeline, are rather shocking. And Allison, I think you probably know some of this already. But so first of all,
but tell
the
our
standards
listeners,
around
Tangerine, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. So the standards around this industry are unfortunately terribly lax. First of all, I want to say it's actually legal to have leaks. Leaks are expected, so leaks are planned for. Secondly, I just described that this is the longest length of HDD pipeline anywhere on the planet. But the construction of the pipeline itself, so these pipeline pieces, the segments of line, are either 40 or 80 feet long. And then they're connected by what are called weld joints. And weld joints have structural weaknesses. I mean, it's a developing industry, but, you know, these pipelines are put under a lot of pressure. They have there are weaknesses. There are vulnerabilities. Well, one of the really odd sort of lack of regulations around this is that this pipeline length, before it goes under this lake, only 10% of those weld joints are required to be inspected for perfection. So 90% of those weld joints could have a problem. Well, according to the expert witnesses that we will be bringing into court, people from around the world, people who do build these pipelines for a living, it's not an if this pipeline leaks, it's a when. And
that is absolutely true. As somebody, let me just chime in with that. Because as somebody who's covered this area, you know, it's all pipelines leak. There's no way that they don't leak. It is they anticipate for it because they can't prevent it. In fact, we could go into, you know, there's been a fiction around that they're perfectly safe, but the known fact is, and all of the boards that look at it are that they leak. We don't have a proper government agency that is looking into or inspecting that on any of these pipelines. Anywhere in the country, it is a captured corporate agency that was created by former Vice President Dick Cheney, and the leaks are inevitable. And it's, you know, basically they can. The end result is they contaminate aquifers, they contaminate lakes, they contaminate water supplies. And, you know, what we've said with all our years of protest here on the East Coast is you can't drink the fuel. You know, water is life, which is, you know, it's just a core biological fact, ecological fact, as well as a spiritual reality of our need to honor that, as tempting as it is for those who think they're profiting or providing this form of energy, when, of course, we know that there are other sources of energy that could be developed, that are being developed, that don't have this problem. So this is a choice, actually, you know, by industries that are vested in this to poison water, because that is inevitably going to happen. And also, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about this wild bill, or maybe you can, Tangerine, but that pipeline was moved to this location because other people didn't want their water being poisoned.
Exactly.
Let me speak to that just a bit, because it's even trickier than that. There were three other locations that were considered. Two were rejected very quickly, and the final, the third one was just outside of North Bismarck, which is predominantly white. In defense of the people of Bismarck, they did not even get a chance to comment on this. Actually, the company itself, working with the Army Corps of Engineers and others, rejected that pipeline route. Interestingly, though, it is a far safer route. There were a couple, you know, sort of problems that could have been handled, but it was it's not even comparable, the safety of that route versus the complete grave risk of the route going under Lake Oahe. But they rejected it, and they rejected it because it was easy to put it on these tribal lands. Yes. I mean, so this is a case of environmental racism here. This is environment. This is injustice and discrimination. So yes, and also, by the way, conveniently, the company saved something like $27.5 million by choosing the tribal land route. So a lot happened here, but it's just shocking because there's an engineer, a mechanical engineer, who actually, he does build these pipelines for a living, and he is consulting with the Standing Rock Sioux and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes on their cases in court, and he has proposed a fourth route or fifth route that would be safer than any of them, and the Army Corps didn't even look at it, but neither did ETP. So, you know, it's shocking, and it's profoundly unethical and greedy, and just it's indefensible. Just it's that simple. This is an indefensible pipeline route. This is an indefensible pipeline being put on these tribal lands and putting, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people at risk, and placing a very clear and disproportionate burden on them and their lives and their futures, because it will poison the water. And there are three aquifers, by the way, near and under Lake Oahe. So I could go into more of the dastardly details. I don't want to take up too much time on this because I know we have several subjects to cover, but one last thing that's been, you know, it's been interesting witnessing, coming to know the journey of this pipeline from start to finish, and how many interesting things that this company has managed to skirt along the way. I think many of your listeners might already know this, but the pipeline was cut into multiple pieces, and then so that the company itself could skirt the higher standard of regulations around one longer length of pipeline. So they basically lied, and they're saying it's a bunch of pipelines. They happen to be strung together, but we only have to be tested, or, you know, the criteria we have to be met are for shorter pipelines. So that's just one way this company has gotten around being ethical and, you know, moral and, you know, doing anything right by the public.
This is a very important point, Tangerine and Bill, because this is standard operating procedure for these companies. And we have been fighting pipelines in the Northeast, and we've seen this exact same thing. They fight, they change the name, and very often, disgustingly, they adopt native names. For example, the pipeline in our region is called the Algonquin Incremental Pipeline.
My
friend Rachel Mark O'Haven, who was on the show, said there's nothing Algonquin about it. But they, you know, or it's called the first, you know, American pipeline or whatever. They give it different names. But it's community by community. And that means, you know, suddenly each community, instead of saying this is a whole pipeline, it's actually going to a place where, you know, this energy is going to be exported abroad for profit rather than even used by Americans, and a lot of people are very uninformed about that fact. This is by design so that each community is struggling on their own as it suddenly comes to them with no oversight from the government and with very little ability to unify. And so I also have to say that what has been so extraordinary about Standing Rock is this has been going on, but it is Standing Rock and the Sioux people who have brought this to international awareness through, you know, taking the stand and forming the camp and saying, you know, we stand here. And, you know, we're in a moment of sort of sadness and mourning that the camp, has been cleared for this pipeline to proceed. So it's really important and hopeful that this lawsuit happen because this has become a symbol for the whole world and a reminder for the whole world of what's going on, you know, what has been going on and what is going on. In fact, it is tremendously unjust. And so, you know, you have like 10 plaintiffs, is that correct, who are bringing you're bringing it on their behalf, or how is that working?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're bringing it together. So we have 10 plaintiffs from, I think, four or five different tribes at this point. We have the Cheyenne River Sioux, Standing Rock Sioux, Pine Ridge Lakota, Oglala, maybe Rosebud. Yes, they all have very strong claims. One of our claims is that, you know, this land is sacred. This land and this water is sacred to Bill and his people. He certainly should be the one describing that. But what we can liken this to, Allison, is if we were to put a pipeline through Arlington National Cemetery, or if we were to put a pipeline through a church, I mean, why is it okay for us to destroy the sacred burial grounds of Bill and his people? Why is it okay for us to completely gravely threaten their sacred water, their water supply? I mean, whether it's a resource or whether it's a sacred to their entire core, you know, ethos and sense of existence, and it's both. Why do we expect in this day and age, in 2017, that this kind of this has been described as ecological genocide against the Sioux, the Lakota, and the Sioux? It is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think Bill should speak to that because he's living it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell us, please, Bill, how this is for you and your people.
This is as first people of this nation, you know, our burial sites, our ceremony sites are all across these lands. You know, whether you're a Mohawk or whether you're Arapaho, or, you know, as long as you're indigenous and live here on these lands, you know, there are our sacred sites, there are our burial sites, our ceremony sites, you know, that have been destroyed, and they're continuously doing it to this day, and it's hard for me to accept that, because how would they like it if we went into their cemeteries and started digging up things, you know, and you know, they won't accept it. They'll call the law and they'll put us in jail and we'll go to prison for that. So, a lot of injustice, you know, that has been placed among the indigenous people throughout the years and decades, and you know, it affects us all in a very serious way, spiritual, you know,
it's traumatizing. I mean, to see, like, you know, what we have seen, you know, from outside is the videos that have come from, you know, the Indigenous Rising and other groups, other media groups, where we have seen people peacefully protesting subjected to violence, military force pushback of unarmed people, you know, and, you know, it's like, how can this be justified? And what is it like to be there and see this? I mean, and to go through it and to see people harmed and to fear for your lives. And, you know, Americans like to think that, you know, our country is a democracy, it's a good place, it's benign, you know, and all of this. And yet we see this, and it tells an entirely different story. What is it like for you to be the ones who stand there? You don't run, you don't shoot back, and through you, this reality is revealed to the world. I mean, it must be very painful to suffer and see your people suffering.
Yeah, it's very traumatizing. It has traumatized a lot of people on the front lines, and it has harmed them. And people lost body parts, lost their eyes, you know, and they've been, you know, with the being shot with these rubber bullets, you know, and these police officers that were inflicting that on us, you know, they aim directly at our faces. They aim directly at our private areas. They aim directly at areas that, you know, even the women were shot in our private areas, you know. And, you know, the one lady, she had some very, very serious damages done to her arm because of a concussion grenade that hit her arm, and it did permanent damage to her, you know. And it this is all very, very traumatizing to us and our young children that have to see that, you know. It was like
people are there with their families. The family is living there because this is their home. It's not like they brought their children from their suburban neighborhood to a demonstration. This is like, we live here, and these people have come, and they have invaded our home in order to take it away from us and to get us out of the way. And so if this is what's happening, this is the children are there with their parents, and this is what they are seeing. This is how they are seeing Americans and the American government, you know, because this is how the American government is acting. And yet many people also have come to stand with you. The veterans have come to stand with you. Many people I know, activists, have come to stand in solidarity and to do some of the work that needs to be done to keep the camp going. So many people also have joined with and feel part of your struggle as a result of this. You know, what is that all? I mean, you never knew that any of this was going to happen. It was like your lives were going along, and then this day came, and you were called. It's almost. I mean, how do you look on that?
Well, Bismarck Mandan, they had that original pipeline routed to go through their their area, but what made it so easy for them to say, no, we don't want it here. Let's put it down by the reservation over there. And they said, they snapped it. Oh, yes, yes, let's do that then, you know. And in the instant, you know, they were already putting that pipeline in our direction. And as I was at Sacred Stone Camp, I could see across the river, you know, the pipeline coming our direction, you know, the digging, and then it stopped on that end, on the east end, and then it came from on the west side over here. You know, as it got closer and closer, we took a more stronger stand. People from all around the world, you know, came to support us, and that was just a very, I mean, you know, it just did something to me that brought me more aware of, and made me want to even fight this even more, you know.
Because people are standing with you and realizing the righteousness. So, you know, Tangerine, what is the court case, and what will you seek to attain in this court case?
Well, we will actually seek to stop the pipeline on tribal lands. I know that that's a it's a steep hill to climb, and we are definitely in a David and Goliath situation. But as I keep reminding everyone, David brought down Goliath with a slingshot. So we are the slingshot, all of us together, our plaintiffs and our amazing legal team, and really people from around the world who are coming in to help us on this effort. And we do. We aim to first of all, we aim to stop the pipeline from being completed. We aim to stop the oil from running under Lake Oahe. And I don't think that there's any stopping the completion of the construction under the lake, but we sure aim to stop the oil from flowing. I think that that's our best chance. And you know, if they want to reroute it, that's that company's business. This group does not have the resources to fully stop the entire, you know, construction of the pipeline right now. But we're sure going to do our darndest to, at the very least, protect, work with our plaintiffs to protect their people, and to make sure that a safe route is chosen rather than this, even though they've already chosen this one. So that's the beginning of it. It's also because these plaintiffs deserve their day in court. And one thing, you know, they need their stories and their voices to be heard. One thing that I'm struck by in my coming to know Bill, and even on this conversation now, is, you know, I hear some of what he has been through. I feel like I've had it, even though I grew up in the U.S., you know, I'm a U.S. citizen, et cetera. I should know more, but I feel like I've been really clueless my whole life. Like, I know it has not been easy for our Native American population, but I was remarkably, embarrassingly clueless. And just Bill and I have coffee every couple of days by phone. You know, he calls me or I call him. He's in South Dakota. I'm in New Mexico. And we sit, he's in the snow, I'm in the sun, and we sit and we talk. And it's been very dear to me. And I hear his stories and the personal hardships, which he can share if he would like. But it's phenomenal, incredible financial hardship and personal hardship that he is actively overcoming. And not only is he overcoming, but he's inspiring and helping care for younger people around him. He's a mentor to people, and I'd love him to be able to share that. He's inspiring to me, and yet he's coming from a place of such incredible hardship. And so meanwhile, though, what I want to say I'm really struck by is I hear the sorrow in his voice, and I feel it. I feel what he's going through, even though I can't possibly fully know. I can't know that same intergenerational trauma of what we've done to our indigenous people, and it's horrifying. But at the same time, he's personally embodying or, you know, exemplifying, you know, grace under pressure and kindness and heart and spirit. And, I feel like I'm being changed by this process at Standing Rock and by Wild Bill himself. And so, I think that it really well embodies that dichotomy of what has happened on the ground at Standing Rock and why Standing Rock has become a global phenomenon. And that is because anyone who's actually paying attention, and good for you, everyone who's listening, good for you for paying attention when your mainstream media is so abjectly failing to cover the actual issues, like these egregious abuses, civil liberties, and human rights abuses at Standing Rock. But while Bill is enduring these human rights and civil liberties abuses personally, after everything else he's gone through, he's still coming from a place of hurt and hope and spirit. And,
that's great. It's a really big deal. I just want to also mention to our listeners that you can participate and support this effort because there is currently fundraising going on, crowdsourcing is going on, where the ordinary person can help contribute to the legal costs of bringing this case. Tangerine, can you tell people where they can go? And, you can give $20, you can give whatever you can give $50, you can give whatever you can give. And just to be part of it, contribute your energy and focus to this. Where do people go to contribute?
Thank you so much. Yes, actually, we do. Our tagline is we crowdsource justice because we can't do it without you, the public. That's how we do this. We are all volunteer, so 100% of the funds go to the cost of this case and to making sure our plaintiffs can get to court, et cetera. We're taking care of their travel and so on and so forth. So you can go to two different places. One is revolutiontruth.org, and we have a PayPal fundraiser there. And the other one is called, it's a GoFundMe fundraiser. It's called Stop DAPL, D-A-P-L, Stop Trump. If you look that up on GoFundMe, you'll see a great description of our case there. And yes, we're happy for anything. I mean, $5, $3, $50, whatever people can give. We do this with the public. We also do panel discussions, and we'll have our plaintiffs and our lawyers on a panel, and we take questions from the audience while we're doing this. We'll do some of those online over the coming months. So we do try to include, we're like a teeny tiny ACLU, except we're grassroots and we include the public. It's how we function. So.
That's great. That's a great opportunity that you can participate.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just want to pick up also to ask Bill with, what you were just saying also before Tangerine, which is, one of the things that I have often heard is that a lot of people assume that in order to be an activist, you have to be angry about something, and sometimes we are in anger as a motivator. But there's a way that even though that sense of injustice and righteousness and the need to protect the land and the pain over the harm and the trauma that has come to your people is there, it still there is the ability to be in love and in gratitude for the earth and what it gives us and to others and to spirit. I mean, how is it, Bill, that, where does that come from among the Native people, among your tribal people? Where does that strength originate from?
Just who we are as a red nation, this land that we live on, we have been self-sustainable. We lived off this land. Everything this land and everything this earth has to provide for us, it kept us alive. Like you were mentioning about being angry and expressing yourself in an angry kind of way. Well, the way I feel about that is like the anger is just going to inflict more against us. You know, and so if we could do this in a peaceful and careful manner, without screaming obscenities, without screaming, you know, against or opposed individuals, and then well, we could do this in a peaceful and prayerful way, and through a legal way, you know, justice will be served. I do believe that.
Yes, I do too. I do. And I was speaking with a Taos Pueblo woman this morning who's actually volunteering for us a bit, and she's doing a lot of work in her own state of Ohio. And her tribe won for I think it's called Blue Lake, and I need to read about it, but they took the battle to court for their water, and they won. So it's totally possible. And I don't, you know, though this is the sort of final hour, and the world just sort of assumes that this is a done deal. We don't. We don't assume this is a done deal, and we are taking them to court. So,
Well, you know, we won in New York State in terms of stopping, you know, instating a fracking ban. You know, so we do win, and let this one be a winner, because this one means more to everyone. And also, it will rectify a centuries-old injustice. How can we call ourselves a righteous people and call our country a democracy, and act this way toward those who came before, who preceded us, who are the First Nations here in this land? It's just so incredibly crystal clear that honoring those agreements and honoring the people who give back to the earth, are able to live on the earth by giving back to the earth rather than just taking for themselves. The Native people are our teachers. You know, that's why we feel great and wonderful. And everybody, you know, loves and wants to help who senses the importance of this. So, you know, having even our all having this conversation is a tremendous, you know, it's something that comes about because of these injustices, but it's also the way that we all can contribute to ending these injustices. And that's tremendously important for us to live in righteousness and integrity and in you know, in sustainably on the earth. Bill, could you just tell us a little bit, we only have about four more, or actually, let's see, we have another 10 minutes, but could you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you live on the land, you know, what your, you know, how you live there?
Well, right now, I live in a rural area along the highway here, and I burn wood for my heat source. I have to haul water from town. You know, I have no running water or no plumbing facilities in my home yet. And I've been trying to work on that, and yet to no avail. I can't get no help from anybody. So I just got to keep working and keep on working at it, you know, and never give up. That's my motto in life, you know, never give up. So,
you don't have power either, right?
Pardon me?
I
have no electricity either. And right across the road from me, I can see the power lines right there. But I don't want to be hooked up to that grid. I want to use the wind and solar energy that people have been talking about. And that I think if I start, if I can use that, and I can, I'm a display, okay? If I can make it work for me, other people can see that as they drive by every day. They can see. They'll want to make it work for them too. You know, a positive influence is what I'm after. You know.
Hmm.
That's great. I believe that that's going to happen. Go ahead, Allison. Sorry.
That's exactly it. You know, people need examples. People need teachers. People need those who go before and show us the way. And that is, you know, that's what you're doing. And so this whole thing where we think we need more and more and more and more and more and, you know, way more than we actually really need, it isn't really fulfilling anything. It's just we, you know, got caught up in this, and that's how, you know, we end up taking too much from the earth, and you're showing that it's, you know, that it's possible to get by from taking less and still, you know, and through retaining that respect for the earth, it's like we're all better off. You know, thank you so much for doing that. If you could kind of speak to all the listeners of this show and Americans in different places that are, you know, listening to our conversation today, what would you like more of us to understand about the earth itself, about, you know, our earth?
First of all, I want to make a point here that I feel very strongly about. You know, you don't have to be indigenous to fight for what is right.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
You just have to have the willpower to stand up and do so. You know, and so I encourage all the listeners out there that are listening to spread this message, spread this word that you know. If you feel something wrong, you know, against our environment, especially, you know, against our Mother Earth, you know, stand up and make a fight of it. You know, the more people that we have, or the more people that you can get together to stand up for your fight, the more you'll be heard. You know. It takes a good high number of people to make these changes, you know. And I encourage everybody that, you know, like I said, you know, you don't have to be Native American to take a stand. Just do what you feel is right. If you feel that, you know, that damages to our Mother Earth is gone way too far, well, then we all have to take a stand to stop it. And we can.
We do. Yes.
And
yes, we can.
And yes, we can. Yes, we can. And we are. That's great. And again, revolutiontruth.org. There's a big banner at the top of the website that you can click on, and it will take you to more information, some of the things we've discussed today, as well as the link to make a donation if you'd like to participate that way. And also, if you're on social media, you know, follow these events, tell other people about them. You know, as Tangerine mentioned, and, you know, it's a constant theme of this show, you know, because I've been in a journalist and in the media for several decades and have watched the fact that it's not just, you know, there's been this thing lately of what is called, you know, some people have named recently fake news, and suddenly everyone's going, fake news, fake news, fake news. You know, the problem is not just people who don't get the facts straight or who are doing wrongful things, although that is a big problem. It's a huge problem. But the problem is also what is left out, the stories we don't tell. You know, and I've shared this before in various settings, but I worked at CBS News primetime, back in the day. That was one of the jobs that I held. And at one point, I proposed to producers at 60 Minutes that we cover the work of a Lakota leader named Phil Lane Jr., who was helping his people overcome various kinds of addictions. And I thought it would be a great news segment for 60 Minutes. And someone took me aside and basically said, "Don't you know we don't cover Native Americans?" And, you know, this shocked me to my core. This is something that happened probably over 15 or 16 or more years ago. And I didn't understand that there were these hidden rules, you know, about what we can say, what we can do, what we can cover, who we want to hear from, who we give validity to. And then, in fact, you know, we'll put on a CEO and allow, you know, as happened when we were fighting the fracking in New York and the Northeast region, you know, the CEO of the gas company got plenty of airtime. And then the people who were trying to protect their water were, you know, they're a bunch of hippies. We don't want to hear from them. So, you know, I always urge people to get on Facebook, follow Tangerine Bolin and me, follow other people, get the story, follow Young Turks, where Tangerine has recently appeared, Democracy Now, which has covered this. You know, don't stay in your silo and tell others about it, too, because we're not getting the full picture when everyone isn't telling their side. So, you know, I'm so grateful, and I want to thank you both for taking the stand so that the Standing Rock people and the water and the earth have their day in court. You know, may we prevail. May you get, like, a really good and righteous judge. And keep following this, everyone who's listening. Don't let this story die out. Oh, they just, you know, came in with military force and now it's over. So, you know, it's not over. It shouldn't be over. It mustn't be over until justice is served. And, you know, we all have the obligation and the honor to participate in this. So I just want to thank you both so much, you know, for being on Connect the Dots. You know, it's just been amazing to have you here. I'm so grateful. I've, you know, been wanting to cover this, and I hope you'll come back on and bring other people with you. Thank you, Wild Bill Left Hand Senior, Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Member, and you, Tangerine Bolin of Revolution Truth. You know, please come back on the show. We want to keep following this story. We want to hear and get, you know, the voice. Voices, you know, of the people who really are showing us the way to be water protectors, to be earth protectors, and to be righteous people. Thank you. Thank you for your work and what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Never give up.
Never give up. Okay, we're going to make that our sign out for today's show, Never Give Up. So thank you.
Never
I'm going to use that. I'm borrowing that from you, Bill. So listeners, you know, thank you for listening, for spreading the word, for getting involved, for letting others know. And a special shout out to my dear friends, you know who you are, of the East Coast Wampanoag Tribe. Who are my closest Indigenous teachers, friends, and neighbors. Thank you for your love and leadership, too. And remember, everybody, in the world, words of Wild Bill Senior here, never give up.
Never give up. See you next week.
Never give up. And we'll be back next week, next Wednesday, with an edition of Connect the Dots. Thank you.
Was not.